Welcome into another edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, and for this edition of the podcast, we are joined by a special guest and a friend of the program. Mario Mercurio is back, Associate Athletic Director. Mario, we've been doing this for years, but this is the first time we've been in this setting. We are inside a classroom right now on the second floor of the Cintas Center, and this is where you guys have been operating out of for the last, how long, a few weeks now?
We are 1 month deep into calling the second floor of Cintas Center our headquarters. Starting in July, we moved down here along with the women's staff. There are four classrooms here on the second floor, and what used to be, if any former Xavier students from the 2000s are listening, it's the space that used to be the cafeteria inside of Cintas has been converted into our academic headquarters for all things athletic academics. So inside of that are four classrooms. The women's staff is housed in one. The men's staff is housed in another, and we're sitting in the third.
So what's it like during the day when guys are like taking recruiting calls and the normal chaos is going on and you're all inside the same room?
It's been an interesting month. It's been, as you can imagine, with Coach Steele, kind of like a 1 month long nonstop recruiting meeting. You have constant commentary from Dante Jackson, and I would say
he's a very quiet guy, so I'm sure it doesn't get loud in there at all.
Yeah, I would tell you, we're moving back upstairs tomorrow morning, and if we had more than one day left down here, there may be some people that would break, but it'll be good to kind of get back on our own turf upstairs. The whole office space, the men's and women's staff both share a hallway up there, and that entire space got renovated, new TVs, new furniture, so it should look good.
Well, we're here right before you guys take off for Spain, and that's kind of why we thought it was a good time. You've had some practice leading up to this. Some scheduling things are, you know, coming into form. We're getting close to the start of actual practice here in a few months. It's kind of a good time to look at stuff. And we'll start with talking about that Spain trip. First of all, someone wanted to know, how is your Spanish? Will you be able to get around out there?
Personally?
Yeah.
My Spanish?
Yeah.
It's funny. I just got my, whatever it is, bi-monthly or season, once every 4 year copy of my St. Xavier High School magazine.
Yeah.
And I saw my Spanish teacher, Paul Rieselman, is retiring. And hopefully with his retirement, my records in his class go by the way of the dodo bird as well. My Spanish is not good.
Well, maybe you can bring him along as like a tour guide.
Could. Or, yeah, he's got some free time. Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm going to have to rely on a couple other people to navigate our Spanish.
Talking about just the logistics of a trip like this, how complicated is it for you to arrange an overseas trip for an entire basketball team?
You know, we kind of we work with a company. This company that we selected for the trip is actually the same company that handles Battle for Atlantis, Lee Miller and Complete Sports Management. And she's very experienced. She has four or five teams over there just this summer alone. And she does all of the heavy lifting. And we'll dictate the pace in terms of number of games we want to play, cities we want to go to, a couple of sites we'd want to see. But she's the expert. I mean, there's no way internally. And we've thought about it before because it's a big number. You know, how much of that could we trim off if we, quote unquote, ran our own trip? But her connections, her company's connections, even beyond just the travel piece of it, but she's hyper connected to USA Basketball and the club teams over there and setting up the games. It wouldn't be worth us trying to piece together our own foreign journey. So we really lean on her to kind of navigate that.
Is there any part that does stand out as particularly tough for you guys? Or?
You know, one of the more interesting pieces with this year came with the game coverage. You know, we just figured that 2019, there has to be a way for us to be able to share our games live streamed HD with our fans back home, and that was a piece early on we tried to do the heavy lifting with, and we spoke to Fox and navigated a couple of options and ideas and chased down some leads, but some scenarios were just incredibly expensive, and we would have had to own all of that expense. And honestly, we have no personal pay-per-view model set up through gozavier.com or even with Fox, so we ran into a lot of dead ends. And again, giving Lee Miller credit, she negotiated our deal, which you've seen obviously with Flow Sports. We'll be one of, I think, five or six teams over there, Seton Hall, Georgetown. That all kind of developed from a little bit with our conversations with her about, you know, we think there's a market for that.
And so is it $12.99, you get three games? You guys are playing three games while you're over there?
I will tell you this. I was in a meeting this morning, and I know our social media crew is putting together a how-to video. You get all three games. and it's a month-long subscription that you have to sign up for. Mm-hmm. So I think the number you said, which is $12.99, is the breakdown. If you sign up for the entire year, they ask for a full commitment, and the monthly breaks down to that. I think for a single standalone month, I believe it's $29. So again, I think depending on what date you sign up, and I didn't look at those other college basketball team schedules, you're going to get USC's games, Washington's games, Seton Hall, Georgetown, and Georgia Tech, I believe, is the other team. So I, you know, if you're a college basketball junkie and you want some August action midday, it's a little worthwhile venture.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you know what time the games are going to be played? What time they'll be showed?
And honestly, that was, we nailed down our game times based on just this. I was talking to BJ from Dana's yesterday, and I joked that I knew he would hit me, because he always hits me way too early about our Cincinnati game times and our Villanova game times. And I said I deliberately wanted to get him a noon Saturday game back here Eastern Standard Time, so we could get a little action at Dana's. So all of our games will be played 6 o'clock Spain time, noon Eastern Standard.
Now, you mentioned looking at some other avenues before you went with flowsports.com. I just have to ask, because I didn't get a call, how far down the hole did you go of looking at just Facebook living on a cell phone and having Dan and I standing on either side talking and doing the play-by-play in color?
At no point were you part of the equation in terms of live streams. Maybe you should have been.
I think that's a major miss on your guys'
part. It could have been.
I think you'll hear it from Xavier Nation about that.
And we did discuss your name about commentary. You know, we had talked about, do we want to see if we can position some Xavier guys as our color or play-by-play guys over there? And obviously Byron and Joe would have been first at bat, but Flow Sports is providing their own talent, and I believe they're actually going to commentate and cover the game from Austin, Texas. So it'll be that model that, you know, you've read about, where
a couple guys with under 1,000 Twitter followers. I thought that was curious, I will admit. A little bit shocking we didn't get the call here. I know Dan's probably not happy about that. So we won't take it as a shot at us, I promise. How much downtime and sightseeing time will the team have in Spain? What type of other stuff will you guys get to do while you're there aside from the basketball?
We kept the trip tight. I think it's 7 nights, eight days, basically, with the travel. Other teams, you're seeing them going to Australia for 14. You're seeing 11-day European trips. Maybe it's me, but I just think that's too long. I mean, the summer, it's not starting to feel long, but today is practice number 7. These guys have been around one another a lot. Everything is accelerated. The pressure is accelerated. So we opted to keep it tight. So with that, there's not a tremendous amount of downtime where it's like beach day after beach day after beach day. But we'll share our full schedule with everyone online, just to kind of give everyone a feel for what our day-by-day looks like. But we're going to hit both of the soccer stadiums in Madrid and Barcelona. Other teams who have done the tour said it's incredible. A couple other sightseeing options. One beach day, some good restaurants. It'll be good.
Do you have a favorite overseas trip story from any of your previous trips with previous teams?
I didn't join the team in Brazil last time, just because of some other things that were going on back here. Our other trip was to the Bahamas, which that was just kind of that quick go steal 3 games, and I think we actually might have only played 2. I don't know, but that was kind of to get the practices that year, which was nice. Honestly, there are benefits to that, to just hitting the Bahamas quick, cheaper. And we'll see. We're 4 years away from that next one. We'll have to figure out what that looks like.
Anything else we missed about the Spain trip before we sort of change gears here?
No.
All right. Scheduling, always a big topic of conversation when we meet up, and there were questions on the message board. I know the Don 15 wants to know, how will you handle scheduling going forward, as X essentially is guaranteed 2 more games versus a high major every year, talking about UConn joining the conference, of course.
Don 15's on it. You know, you are getting 2 more high major games every year, but with that, you're losing a little more control. I mean, I can't remember what our first year that we did this podcast, but if you think about it, just 6-7 short years ago when we were in the A-10, we had such considerable control over our non-conference portion of our schedule, which was also, if you think about it, a much bigger portion of our schedule. The A-10 was a 16-game schedule. Now we're facing a 20-game schedule starting 2021. I don't mean to sound negative or create a sense of discomfort, but there is a little bit of a sense of discomfort. I mean, you are locked in starting the following, you know, I don't want to call it next year, but essentially it is next year, 2021. Starting with that year, the script is really written for a huge percentage of your schedule. the question was asked about, you know, the two guaranteed games. Those are two more high major games. So you're looking at 20 Big East games, 10 home, 10 away. You're looking at a home and home every year with Cincinnati. You're looking at the Big 12 series. You're looking at the Gabbett series. And then you're looking at a two-year on, two-year off, two-year on series, somewhat in perpetuity with Wake Forest. You know, part of me, again, we all kind of have grown up with Xavier over the last, you know, this last run, however many years you want to say it, and the way we've scheduled has been a part of it from the standpoint of challenging ourselves, pushing our brand, pushing our program, trying to get into those schools, you know, play with those schools that we hadn't been able to sign home-and-home deals with, get those neutral site games, albeit a disaster with a school like Duke, or, you know, our Illinois series with United Center and U.S. Bank, or Kansas State series. You know, bit by bit, those all were little stones. Those were all steps to get us where we are today. And so, again, back to the original question, you're talking about 20 Big East games. You're talking about some combination, depending on what year, of Cincinnati, Wake Forest, Gabbett, and Big 12. You're talking about, which another dynamic here that's changed, is the exempt event. So, again, for the sake of this conversation, right now we're scheduled to be in a three-game neutral site tournament in 2020. That's 27 games. And honestly, the bigger than the number is the fact that they're all high major games. So the good news in that is your strength of schedule is completely locked in. The bad news of that is our flexibility, our control, and even just from a cosmetic standpoint, the variety that we deliver to fans. I mean, in that scenario, which we've discussed, the only variety I'll be able to provide for our fans will be those four guarantee games, which they are what they are. I mean, right. We know why we play them. I think you have to be smart with those, but I don't want our fans to ever get fan fatigue and just there not to be any excitement over a non-conference schedule. You know, it's like, hey, just going back to Cintas Center in November, you'll get a little variety with the Gabbett and you'll get a little variety with the Big 12 piece, but not necessarily control in that variety.
Do you see any wiggle room in the future with that, or any way to change that going forward?
You know, we have to be smart. I know Gabbett and Big 12 obviously have terms that'll end at some point, and whether they get rolled over will be way above my pay grade. Cincinnati is not going anywhere. You know, the guarantee piece, I know it's easy to look at those games and say, what's one more? What if you just change that one guarantee into another series? If you've heard this podcast before, I've talked about it ad nauseum, and I won't go full script here, but it's more than the guarantee game. It's I want to put our program in a position in November and December to post up here in Cincinnati as much as we can. I mean, I look at it in the scenario we just talked about. This is what scares me, is it's a 16 home game model that we talked about. 10 Big East home games, 4 guarantee games at home, then you're playing Wake at home, and your Big 12 game that year is at home. And that's just not enough. I mean, I hate to make it a budget reason. It's not enough from a budget reason. You know, I don't want to make it look like a competitive reason and say, hey, these other teams are just stocking up on home games, because there's schools that have always done it. It's more than that. It's you got a guy with a back problem. It's nice having 15 straight days in December where you're home. You have guys in class. I mean, that's often forgotten about. It's nice to steal as many days as you can, uninterrupted travel, especially coming off of an exempt event where you know you're losing a week in November. You have exam week coming up in December. You know, selfishly for us, how many days can you camp out here? So the guarantee games, I mean, trimming it down to just 4 frightens me a little bit. It does. The number 16 can't stay 16. I'll tell you that, and I wouldn't want it broadcast all over the world, but you know, you gotta,
no one listens to this podcast, that would be perfect.
Enough, the people that listen to it, I trust, though, they know it's a little bit like Fight Club.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, we're in the trust circle.
We're in the circle of trust here, but it can't stay 16. And I you know, you look at last year, I saw the attendance numbers came out, and the first column was home games. It's like Syracuse was 19, Kentucky 18, Creighton, Marquette 19, Indiana 21, NC State 22, Memphis 21. If we're sitting on 16, that's a problem for a lot of reasons. So to your point, is there has to be some tinkering. We have to find a way. The one way you can kind of get is through that exempt event. with the rules changing, you know, you're able to go a two-game neutral site event and steal that other game that you have control over, and ideally you can turn that into, and again, I know there's some negative connotation with this from a fan, but you can turn it into another guarantee game.
Right.
If it's a year where maybe you have Wake at home and a Gavitt game at home, and you're a little home heavy somehow through those series, or you find it a neutral site game. But
did the selection committee and the job they did this past year change your thought at all on how you need to approach? I mean, I know there's not a lot of flexibility, so it may not matter at this point, but did you see how they handled things this past year and change your philosophy at all?
We definitely saw, and we have all the data, but the problem is you're now reduced to a one-year data window.
To where it's changing every
year. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, as you switch to the net, it's hard to look at this in just that one-year sample size as to what their value points are. And you know, it just
did you feel like it shifted a lot with the net, or did most things kind of stay the same, or the overall goal stay the same?
I felt like the shift was a little bit in philosophy, and it's funny. Greg Christopher and I met with a professor here on campus who is a huge numbers guy, and he's also a huge fan. And we talked to him about digging through some numbers analytically behind scheduling, and just seeing like where are those consistent ties between the net and the RPI. What would our net have been 3 years ago? You know, if the net was in place.
Right.
The year we were one seed, would we have had a one seed under the net? And just trying to use reverse years with the RPI to see if there's any ties we can find as you look forward at the net, because you need a bigger sample size. Snow would always lose his mind at me because I would always complain about our NCAA tournament seed. And we had a Excel formula built that we've just used forever. And we always pumped in a couple key data points after Selection Sunday of teams that were given at large bids. And over time, as it had 15 years of data, you could predict your seed, honestly, by one. It was wild. And that's just committee after committee after committee, looking at the same type of data, having the same data values, the same hierarchy they placed on what was important. Now you don't have that. You have a one-year body of work of the net and really uncharted waters in terms of prioritizing what you want to stick your neck out and do in terms of, hey, are they valuing the number of 20 wins? You know, last year, if we did not play at Missouri, which was, as we know, what the result was, if we would have said, screw it, we are not going to start a home and home and we're just going to play another guarantee game, and we picked up another win, did we make the NCAA tournament? Did we become a higher seed in the NIT? I mean, it's hard to look at that with just 1 year's body of work.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to look at that as you go back there. Like, I'd love to hear what, I mean, did you have a philosophy on whether you would have made it a one seed a couple years ago with the net, or
That's honestly what we charged this professor with. Is there any way you can go through retroactively and see like what would those numbers be?
Yeah. All right. We mentioned sort of the scheduling aspect, but what are your overall thoughts on UConn joining the Big East?
I like it. And we've talked about it on this podcast before. I don't think the Big East needed a punch in the arm. I don't think it was getting stale, but it is a great punch in the arm at the right time. You know, our model of who we've been has been in place here for a little while, and that's the brand that I think everybody's talked about since the beginning, finding a way to bring them back. We have no experience with UConn, at least since I've been here, but I've quickly learned
you've got some things in common, huh?
you've kind of seen their fan base on Twitter already, and they seem to be hot and heavy out there. I've heard tales of what it's going to mean for Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
If you just think about proximity, they roll deep, and I got to imagine if you're a Xavier fan that wants to get up there and get up there at a pretty good price, you may have 1 year left to do that, because I think the demand is just, you're adding an 11th team into a, what was a 10-team field that sold out, I forget what the percentage is, but 94 or 95% of our sessions in the Big East, in Madison Square Garden, have been sold out since the quote-unquote new Big East. So that building has so much juice on tournament night, even if it's Thursday, and having another fan base like that, that'll be awesome for them.
Yeah, I know, just even walking the streets in the past several years while you're there for the Big East tournament, you see a lot of UConn stuff
you
out
do.
There. So, I mean, it will not be a surprise to see them take over Madison Square Garden. It's kind of staying on that line of thinking. Will UConn be part of the Gavitt Big 12 challenges?
You know, I I've not been in those conversations. I got to imagine, again, given the brand and who they are, if there's ways to fit them in, I'm sure they'll try to. The Big 12 challenge was pretty rigid because you have 10 versus 10, and there was a pretty solid grid built, you know, giving everybody equal home games and equal road games. The Gavitt series, as we know, is flexible to say the least. So I got to imagine there'll be some efforts to sneak them in where and when they can.
You act like you guys have had issues with the Gavitt games in the past. With so many high major games on the books, going back to sort of what we were talking about with the next over the next 4 years, after the Advocare next year, are you more likely to do two bye games on campus, or do you think you'll stick with the bracket of four games?
Well, I think the bracket will get tightened to three with the new rule. As the exempt events change, you're going to be limited down to just three games. So the change you'll see, well, the real quick change you'll see is this year, as we play Missouri State at home as a part of the Orlando series, that is done. You won't be able to add that quote-unquote fourth game. But what you will be able to do would be, you name it, whatever type of event in Madison Square Garden, a doubleheader that's quote-unquote exempt, and you could play in that as a part of it, and then either build your own home game in as a part of that event or have a detached home game because you can pick up another game. The wording of the rules is funky, and honestly, I had to have our conference guy double check my math as I kind of laid out our next 3 or 4 years of a plan. But, you know, it's 28 contests plus one multiple team event, not to exceed three games, or it's 29 contests plus one multiple team event, not to exceed two games. So that's kind of the model.
Gotcha. All right. Going down this list of questions from the message board, of course, it was asked, how quickly did you reach out to UCLA to schedule a home and home after Mick got the job?
Honestly, I put that tweet out there, and there were some people unhappy about it on the other side. But I've talked to the guy at UCLA, my counterpart there, for a long time, being candid.
Wait, so who got upset about it? Mick's people, UCLA's people, or UC's people?
The UCLA people were not happy, and I guess I got to do a better job blacking out email addresses next time I do that. But hell, I mean, at the very least, I was just promoting the fact they needed a game, whether or not if it's with us or somebody else. But my counterpart at UCLA, I sharing probably more information than I should. I thought we were going to have the series against UCLA instead of UC. The series that they ultimately played over the last 2 years, I really, really thought that was going to be us, and it came down to the ninth inning, and never got a super clear answer about why they kind of pivoted to UC over us. I think Under Armour might have played a little bit of a role, but
that. You think they're preemptively trying to reel Cronin in?
Could have been. Could have been a recruiting trip 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Could have been. You know, it's
heard here first.
Yeah, that's great. Great foresight on their part. But so I've talked to UCLA about home games, home and home. But I think as you look at kind of the model we just discussed, it's going to be tough.
How unfair do you think it is that coaches are negatively recruiting against Mick Cronin?
Yeah, I can't speak to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any chance you schedule Louisville at some point in the future?
I'm not saying this as a cop out, and I'll be honest as I can. I mean, I think they're just like UCLA. It's just like the Dayton request. It's just like the All Ohio Classic or whatever you want to name it. It's going to be tough. I mean, I'll see if I can kind of clean up my grid, and maybe you can post it. Does your board have like the ability to post actual pictures on it, or is it?
Yeah.
I'll see if maybe I can make a little JPEG of this and let you see kind of just what a generic grid looks like. And hell, if somebody wants to take a sharp look at it and move some of these pieces around and figure out a way to fit in Louisville or UCLA, hey, I'm all ears.
Hold on, are you saying we can crowdsource your schedule going forward with Musketeer Report?
I'm always happy.
Because if I can sell that as a selling point, that might boost subscriptions a little
bit. Hey, that'd be great.
All right, I'm in. All right, transitioned again. You go from scheduling to some questions about facilities and updates and everything. One of the questions they had was the new locker rooms. You guys, the reason you're here on the second floor, and you know, guys are all out of place and everything. What's sort of the latest on the locker rooms?
The locker room, the people who have been displaced because of the locker room are our players. They're in the visitors' locker room until October 1. They're a million miles an hour down there. We start it a little late. We should wrap up with probably 90% of it October 1. There's some pieces, and it's scaring me to death as we sit here and talk, that may be December-ish. You know, I think you've seen those renderings of other places with that big light-up logo on the ceiling. There's just anytime you do a project like that and try to crunch it in a tight time spot, you're going to get some disappointments. But we're flying. It's going to be sharp. You know, it's a great space. It's always been a great space. If you haven't been in it, a quarter of the space was devoted to like a gang prison style shower that nobody used because our guys are on campus, and quite frankly, none of them want to go shower in a huge 12 shower spigot. You know,
understandable. Yeah, they're not old men at Planet Fitness.
So we're basically getting rid of all that, combining it with what was the locker space, and that's kind of one of the biggest features. When we played in Staples Center in the NCAA tournament, we used the Clippers locker room, and you walked in there, and it just, the size just surprises you. I mean, it's 3-4 times the size of just what we had, and want to give those guys a lot of room to move, so their locker space will be huge, and then they'll
Plus be Jennings needs the rooms to dance.
More dance space for Jennings.
Yep.
And then the lounge that's in there, we're working with a couple different companies to get a seamless LED board for a television screen that'll also dub as a film area. I think the idea of like the film room with the tiered seats and you know, drop down screen, it's just, I think,
old.
Yeah, it's, yeah, old. I think you can do better than that. So Chris Schaff and Dave Overbeck here in house have done a lot of the legwork with that, just trying to find a way of, you know, the scoreboards you see in new arenas have 4K capabilities. They're as sharp as a TV as you can buy at Best Buy, and getting a mini version of that, which I think the thing spec'd out right now is like a 21-foot horizontal measurement. It'll be awesome.
Is that probably the coolest or most unique feature of the new?
That'll be the pop piece. You know, you'll be able to put Xbox on it. You'll be able to put YouTube TV on it. You'll be able to hook our video system up to it and watch personnel and scouting stuff. So that'll be the one where if you have a kid on that quick visit, when they walk in, nobody at this point will have something like that.
Second part of that question for the message board are there any other big renovations coming in the future, like a second aux gym or anything?
The second practice gym is the next thing we got to really attack, and it's a big number. It's a big number, and we got to figure out first how to get to that number. We have drawings. I don't know that we've released them, and maybe it's something, another thing I can share with you, but we looked at a couple different facilities, including like Northwestern's football facility, you know, which is like an all glass build right on the lake. And what can we do again that's different? You're in an arms race with all this stuff, and it makes no sense to just look at what Ohio State did or Indiana did and just copy it. You have to step out of that and just be different and get as much juice that you can squeeze out of it. So the plan would be to put it off the back of our building, kind of anchored off of our current practice facility and weight room. You'd expand the weight room a little bit. It wouldn't necessarily sit pancaked to our current practice facility. It's actually angled off of it a little. So there's like a wedge that would sit between the two that could be like an indoor-outdoor training area, give us a little bit more formal space to eat, to feed our guys and gals. So that's next. And it's big because, and I know we've talked about this before, our facility demands have changed. I mean, we're not at the point where if Kiki and Damir Bishop need a place to shoot, like, they're not going outside or going to the rec center. But when this building was built, it was built for a 9-month calendar. We were kind of that first 12-month team, and women's basketball followed, and now volleyball's right there. So as demands for those sports have gone up, and also the amount of time they can spend with their teams, as that has gone up, we have to have a facility that matches that. So
one of the posters had asked, they remember Greg Christopher talking about a new scoreboard and for the Cintas Center, and a possible update being like within the next couple of years. Is there any update there on a bigger or better scoreboard?
You know what, I don't mean to say like it's on the list, but it's on the list. There are plenty of things on that list, and it's pretty close to the top. This is our either 20th year or 20th season in this building, which I've told Brian Hicks he's not allowed to talk about too much because it feels like it dates all of us along with the building and the product. But, you know, we've had a great run in this building, and physically there's some things that are breaking down. I mean, after 20 years in a house, you need a new roof. After 20 years in a house, you need updated electric and different technology. And obviously the scoreboard, 20 nights a year for us, 20 nights a year for the women, or in 2020, 21, where we're only playing 16 home games, you know, however many nights a year, it dictates all the energy in your building. And there's so many things that we want to be able to do in game. from a fan engagement standpoint, from hype videos, that just because of its size, it's a 4-3 layout as opposed to 16:9. So it's basically, you know, right. It's that old box TV compared to a new widescreen TV. And it has to happen. And I think we're in that window where you'll look up there sooner rather than later and see a new piece. I think you said 2 years. I think it's somewhere plus or minus that.
Yeah,
you know.
Within that window.
Yeah.
You were mentioning the arms race and, you know, trying to set yourself apart. What do you think, you know, one of the questions from the message board is, what do you think the best thing on campus is to sell to potential recruits when they come on a visit? And what do you sort of highlight in your presentation to them?
Man, I don't want to be evasive, but you have to go total package. You do. Singling out one thing and, like, hanging your hat on one thing, it leads you down the wrong path, because there's a hell of an article, and again, I don't know your board's capabilities. I'm sure you can post a hyperlink
links.
There.
But yeah, we do have links available, yes.
It's Tom Herman, when he was at – where was he at? Rice as the offensive coordinator. When he was at Rice as the offensive coordinator, he was recruiting Andrew Luck. And anytime he knew Andrew Luck was coming to campus, he had all his GAs and managers losing their mind for the 3 hours prior to his visit, cleaning up every corner, putting up construction signs on rooms that they had told him, like, hey, this will be our new future weight room, and checking out every walk path, making sure it's clean and feels like it's the right place. And one day, ultimately, Andrew Luck called his phone, and he picked it up, and he said, hey, I'm downstairs. And he said he went and met him, brought him in the facility, and he was, like, totally demoralized, because all those bruises and wounds that they covered up intentionally were totally exposed. And like I said, I'll send you the link, and it's a good read, and it's something we share here just amongst ourselves in our facility crew, just reminding people that every little bit matters. Man, this deal, I said it the other night to some of my friends, it's the adult male equivalent of picking a country club. If I say, hey, you got a free country club membership to anywhere in Cincinnati, like, your first thing is, man, I'm excited. And then you start getting selfish, saying, who has the best course? What's the best location relative to where I live and where I work? Who has the best food? You know, and you start getting more and more selfish through the process, seeing, like, hey, I can really shoot for the stars here. And quite honestly, I don't blame our recruits for approaching it the same way. I mean, they're looking at a 4-year commitment to a place, and it's the question at the top of their minds is, what is this place doing for me? And facility is where you live and breathe every day. They that's just the reality of our guys' schedules. They'll spend their time in their classroom, which is, you know, some days as much as 3 hours, but in between classes, when they wake up, when they lift, when they get treatment, again, we're sitting in our academic facility, which is inside of our arena, like, this is their home. So we've tried to rise the standard. We've tried to keep the standards high for every single place that we show kids, and not just from a recruiting and cosmetic standpoint, but just from functionality. You know, our weight room, our training room right now is the best in college basketball. You cannot find a better spot from a functional standpoint, cosmetic standpoint. Our weight room, I would put right there with it. We're going to lose a lot of our tenants in the Cintas Center with the opening of the facility, the Height the Champion Center across campus. So we'll truly be down to basketball, and volleyball. So you'll look at a 5,000 square foot weight room right now, and it's ours, along with two other sports, and same with the training room.
Yeah, it's impressive. That's kind of just an interesting concept, though, when you go back to what Tom Herman was talking about. Have you sensed that, though, with, like, recruits that you guys have on campus? I mean, do you get that same feeling of you always just kind of got to be on it, like, because anything can happen anytime, any guy can sort of show up here at any time?
You have to be. And everybody, not just from kid to kid, but everybody in a recruit's party is looking for something different. The mom, the dad, the uncle, whoever's with them. I mean, different things are important to different people. And for that, that's why you can't go all in and say, hey, we got this crazy locker room and we have all these different bells and whistles and you hit all those marks and the kid loves it. And then you come to a different part in your campus and your academic center is dilapidated and 25 years old. And, you know, you have to keep going and it never ends. And you know, everyone here hears the all for one plugs and the begs for money. I'm begging for money for the locker room right now, just so you know. Hit me on Twitter or hit Seth. I'll give you a
Your
tour.
Venmo's open.
I will give you a tour of that spot anytime if this good economy has put you in a position where you want to fork some money over. We got a spot for it. But
something along the lines of those recruiting that you guys do just a a great job of is the social media aspect, and you continue to take that to new heights. And one of the things you just sort of released a teaser for was the arrival videos, where you went to, it looked like, the hometown of the current freshman and sort of maybe got a background story or something like that. Brian Snow had dropped a nugget on the message board that was kind of your brainchild and something you had came up with. You know, first of all, where did that idea come from for you? And then second of all, one of the questions from the board was, how and when are you planning the release of that series? Is it like going to be all at once where you drop it and people can binge watch it? Is it going to be a week by week thing, or how's that work?
You know, the idea was kind of like groupthink. We get together once a week, and it's kind of a bunch of people who wear a bunch of different hats and just say, you know, what can we project forward for our program. You know, if you think about it, and I know we keep talking about how scheduling and different things have changed, nothing has changed more quickly and powerfully than the way we can cover our own team. I mean, just however many short years ago, it was Tom Izer calling different outlets, begging them to write stories on our guys. And you were praying your games were on ESPN, or you're praying Dickie V mentioned you. All that, I don't want to say is irrelevant at this point, but you truly control your own market. You can project whatever image you want at any point, and we have to be smart about taking advantage of that as much as you can, 365 days a year. And that's just, as we've seen, I think NFL was kind of the first one to push it, and, you know, college football is there. The NBA is certainly there. This deal is a year-round deal, and your site's a great example of it. It's, if your site went dead after our last game, I mean, you'd have a ton of people out there just itching for anything that says, what is Xavier basketball? Who are our guys? Who are these people? We have to answer that and start that process for everybody. And, you know, we've had so many guys who are, I think, we've had so many guys here who are, I think our fans thought they knew. Even recently, guys like Matt Stainbrook and Tu Holloway, I mean, they just got little glimpses into who those guys are. And if me, as a person who sits here on our staff, like, if I've had one regret, it's, can you continue to peel back the layers of the onion? Because all it does is help those guys.
Yeah, I mean, totally agree.
Honestly, and the word, like, personal brand, I feel like it's so overused at this point. But if you're a recruit and you come on this campus and you meet with our staff, that is a huge part of what we talk to these guys about. Using your 4 years here to build your personal brand, to market yourself. Again, like, think how much that's changed. And as I think about how we talk to kids, like, the conversation a couple years ago was, hey, just clean up your Twitter, make sure you're not liking crazy stuff, make sure your Twitter name doesn't have anything crazy to it.
I have two freshmen verified on Instagram, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean,
that's just,
right,
like, that's kind of a big deal.
Right. It's about, you know, just representing yourself every day and telling your own story and us helping those guys. So the arrival is another huge piece of that, and I think it's going to be really well received. I think college basketball wise, college football wise, it might be the first type of program to do this. But basically, we want these stories to start before they get here. We want to show guys in a very raw way who our five freshmen are, and get as much engagement from them on the front end of this process as we can. You know, and I think about, you know, we could all think in our mind those players that are beloved and just part of Xavier lore forever, but is this a new era where we can really start telling the tale of who these guys really are, almost like at a high school level? You know, you look out at your son who plays for wherever, it's like, you know, all the kids on that team personally. You know their mom, you know their dad, you know where they live, you know what they like. The arrival is kind of an effort to do that.
Are there any, I mean, you mentioned a couple of them though, are there any names out there that you think back and you're like, man, I really wish fans would have got to know the real so-and-so? Do you feel like there's anyone who sort of was mischaracterized?
Honestly, I just think all of our guys. I really do, and I know that's such a cop-out, but so many of the guys that we've had here you see with a smiling face or a quick press conference or a quick interaction at camp, but just seeing behind the scenes what drives those guys each and every day, their parents, their hometowns, it just gives you from day one a better point of reference for who they are.
How open are they to doing these things? Are they all willing to talk right away on camera, or some of them like, I'm not so sure?
You know what, I was nervous, and dealing with the parents on the front end was a big part of this. Yeah. As you probably saw in the trailer, the parents are a part of it, and they talk, and they kind of give some backstory. And I think, I mean, you can't go anywhere without seeing somebody film themselves on Instagram or have a camera in their face. And I just think today so many people are so much more comfortable with that than they were.
Yeah, without question. How do you guys plan on rolling these out? Is it going to be something where it's like all at once, or is it going to be kind of an episode each week, or how's that work?
We wanted to shamelessly get that trailer out early, pre-Spain, just because we have a little string of visits coming up and we're getting a little hype built out there. But we dropped the trailer. We're going to head to Spain, and when we get back, we'll probably go weekly. I believe the first one's going to be Deontay Miles, and I've seen the rough cut of that. And that's been such a cool part of the process, because we've involved Fourth Floor Creative, who we actually share a parking lot with, and they're a national brand at this point that does these type of projects. And going through the process to see them get 8 hours of footage on Deontay Miles and whittle it down to what I think is going to probably be 5 or 6 minutes, it's really cool. Incredible footage and just really sharp. Those guys are good.
Sort of on that same page, Sam Matlin was someone who helped you guys out with some video stuff, talking to the coaches. You've already released some videos there. I think the fan base really enjoyed that. Do you think she'll be back with you next summer helping and doing more stuff? Or?
You know what? She finished her undergrad at Western Michigan. She was a Tom Iser recruit this summer, and she's done a great job, honestly. I think she has I don't know what classification of a job, if it's an internship or part-time. She's going to go back to Western Michigan and work with them for a little bit, but ultra-talented, huge part of what we did this summer. Her and Cliff have a series coming out at some point where it's just kind of like a rapid-fire question series they did with our staff and players. That turned out pretty good, but, you know, you asked Sam's last name, and I thought Frere, but, like, it's a great example because Sam Frere's a part of what we do social media-wise as well. And I tweeted – somebody hit me on Twitter, and I responded a couple days ago. But our social media approach, it's truly a village approach. It's crazy. Both of them, Sam Matlin, Sam Frere, are a huge part of what we do. We have student workers. We have grant assistants. Tom Iser's, you know, full-time employees, Cliff across campus. We mentioned Fourth Floor Creative. We use a company in Northern Kentucky that I think is one of the sharpest branding companies that you could find anywhere, BLDG. We outsource stuff. We actually have a project coming up with, I don't want to go all in, but I'll tell you, it would be the most recognizable voice in video game history that I think is going to help us out a little bit with a project coming up, and just trying to mix it up. And the more ideas and the more people you can have around the table, the better.
I know you sort of mentioned that project. Is there anything else new for this year that fans can expect that you are willing to share that you guys kind of have planned? It seems like you add something every year, if not multiple things every year.
You know, we just try to, there's really not, I'm probably underselling it here, but there's not a great ahead of time plan in terms of what we have coming around games. And I think a lot of times you get through the NFL and college football season and kind of see what directions they
I was just going to say, one of the things I think you guys do a really good job, whether it's even Tom's team or people that work in here closer to the basketball team, is I see a lot of people noticing what's going on, you know, up to the minute. Like,
yeah,
if a football school is doing something that's really cool, you guys may have a more unique twist on it coming to basketball time.
It is all a big copycat environment to a degree, and I think everybody leans on everyone else to get those ideas and figure out what ways you can kind of engage your fan base, touch recruits, expose your brand.
But I think that's the difference between people being locked in who really love what they're doing and want to get better at it, as opposed to someone who's just 9 to 5 and checking a box while they're at work, right? I mean, it seems
absolutely
like you guys have a lot of people who are really engaged.
Yep.
It's kind of, there's a bunch of random questions out on the board as well. We just want to kind of run through here rapid fire because we've talked a lot already. Lookout Muskie asks, with it now being a little over a year of working with Travis as the head coach, what are some of the biggest differences that you see in terms of how he runs the program versus his predecessors?
You know, I shy away from like these comparison questions, and I think all those guys would probably be, none of them are sensitive. They're all probably tough enough to hear what is my opinion and probably not even care about a lot of it. But I also think it's a little unfair to use those comparisons just because of like the rapidly, just the dynamic change we've had from Skip Prosser to Travis Steele in terms of the environment they've each been in. Yeah. You know, they always say, who's the best recruiter? Well, it's Travis and it's Chris. Well, it's like, what if Sean Miller was recruiting with Big East on his shirt? You know, if Chris Mack at the beginning of his time had Big East on his shirt, who would he have been? Same way with coaching. Again, I look at the first-year teams that Sean and Travis inherited, and the first-year teams, Thad and Chris inherited. You know, there's no apples for apples. And again, I think back to just the positives that Skip brought, the positives Travis brings, you know, we've been so lucky over my stretch, which is 20 years, to have the guys in that seat that we've had. I mean, in that same 20-year period, there's schools that haven't had one. I mean, we've had, quite frankly, one after another that have incredible potential to be Hall of Fame-level guys,
right.
Winners at, you know, 400 games. I mean, it's hard to really say apples for apples comparisons of each area. Specific to Travis, I will tell you, like, I think the CELO label of a head coach is inaccurate at this point. It's always easy thing to say, like, he's a CEO. You can't be successful at this anymore and be a CEO. You know, a CEO, when you think CEO, is the guy or gal on a private jet in the corner office that's delegating and flying at 60,000 feet, telling people, hey, this is what I need each of you and your shops to do. That doesn't work in college athletics. You have to be a connector. You have to be 24/7. You have to be somebody that really prioritizes personal connections with kids and parents, understands the level of conversations that need to be had on a daily basis to keep everybody in the right mindset, understands more than anything in 2019 culture. You can't win without a culture at this point. And I think as Travis has taken over here and he's in now month, whatever, 15 or 16, the emphasis he's placed on culture, because I think today that is the demand. He's responded to that demand incredibly. And it's something he lives every day and pushes our staff to kind of keep in line with.
Interesting. The same poster is follow-up that's kind of unrelated here. Wanted to know, what has been a few of your favorite NCAA tournament locations over the years?
Hard to beat Staples Center.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Hard to beat Staples Center. Yeah.
Any new court designs on tap in the future? And have you ever thought about integrating the Musketeer head somehow into those?
I had a conversation on Twitter a month ago about our court. And the biggest challenge, we do have a new court coming. I think it'll be next year. Personally, I like our current design. I know it's a little on the more conservative side and plain, and it's actually
clean,
modeled.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's modeled off of our first year design at Cintas Center with just kind of updated marks. I don't know where that font Xavier came on year one. Cintas Center looked like Times New Roman stretched. I mean, but I do like our current look. The poster who, not that asked this question, but who hit me on Twitter talked about an alternate court, and that's something that in spirit I really want to do. Again, it's another first in college basketball. You don't see many college basketball teams rolling out two courts.
Yeah.
It creates a logistical nightmare here. The space a floor takes up once you stack it is immense. And quite frankly, storage space here at Cintas isn't plentiful. So next year we will have a new court. I don't know what we'll do with our old court, if there's a way to keep that for a year or two with an alternate design. But as far as the design goes, maybe we'll use a fan engagement type effort again and see what's out there.
All right. They want to know, what are your five favorite away from home venues that Xavier's played at? You don't have to go all five.
I don't have to go all five. Good.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's favorites.
Hard to say like favorite spots away from home, because I like being home. And
yeah.
Usually when you're away from home, it's a tremendous sense of discomfort. Well,
there's no road trips you appreciate, though? There's got to be a road trip.
Well, road trips are different, because then I start thinking food, like localized food. I mean,
well, right. But
yeah.
I think that's
so when I when I hear venue, I think arena.
Well, okay.
Memphis arena. The when we played at Memphis, That I've said it here on this podcast before, that blew me away in terms of just the overall product. It was packed. You walked in, there were five cops waiting to escort us to the locker room. It just had that big game, big night feel. The Big East, I've said it again here on this podcast, nothing matches like the pageantry that comes with the Big East, all of our schools. Rick, don't laugh.
Okay.
You're the worst person to have across the table when we do.
I was going to say, you can't say things like that in front of me. You know that.
But I would tell you, you walk into Creighton, the field, you get 18,000 strong. You walk into Villanova, whether it's their home campus arena or downtown, Marquette, you know, first year in a new arena. It is a big game. It's SEC football type feel. If you haven't checked off a lot of those trips on your own personal list, like, you've got to, as a Xavier fan, start checking some of those off, because all great environments, all big cities.
Is there two you'd put at the top for the Big East if you're making a trip that you got to go see first?
I'm going to tell you this. It's weird. The year before we were in the Big East, Chris and I were walking down to practice, and Jay Wright was in our tunnel. This is totally random. And it was one of those things, like, you did a double take, and it's like, damn, that's Jay Wright. And we kind of had to walk by him to get to the arena. And he was playing UC, and he got in, I don't even know if Uber existed in whatever year that was, but he got a ride over here and was kind of snooping around. And at that point, we were reading the tea leaves. We knew enough to know that we were probably heading very quickly to the Big East, and talked with him just casually about the conference. And he brought up Providence, and he said, you are not going to understand. You're going to be blown away by Providence. And we're like, really? And he said, you guys are probably familiar with a place like Dayton, or just a high octane, hostile environment. He goes, it will blow away any of those. And I'm going to tell you, like, if you ever have Justin Martin on your podcast, you can ask him about it, because he got it harder than maybe anybody we've taken up there. It is that. It is super hostile. It's East Coast. It's an angry fan base. The arena's about, I kid you not, 45 to 48 degrees. It's freezing cold. And that would be the one that would surprise you. Is that the first one you should go to? The first one you should go to, you have to go to the Big East tournament.
Yeah,
I've said it every year. You have to go there.
No question.
And then if you pick one, I would just kind of go outside of the box and go to a Creighton, who you know, just most likely haven't casually gone to a game at Creighton. Providence, another one like that.
Omaha Steaks. Yeah. I'll be honest, I kind of quit listening to your answer there midway through when you started talking about that conversation with Jay Wright. Is there any other nuggets you can share with us from that conversation?
I mean, I'm just telling you, it was so strange.
It was so strange.
Yeah. He was in our tunnel, just chilling, kind of looking around. I don't know if it was recon to talk to his people about building their new facility or what it was, but it was late February-ish. I mean, I could probably figure out the exact day if I looked. And I want to say somebody even posted it on Twitter. Somebody had a picture of it. It was
really,
it was strange. Yeah,
like a random fan or one of someone inside the program.
Yeah, no, media. Like, I'm telling you, it was like right outside of the media room. Anybody who was walking to our practice would have seen Jay Wright just kind of peeking around.
Maybe it was Pat Brennan. Another poster said he had a back and forth with you on Twitter a few months about some of your painful Xavier memories. Well, what a nice guy he is. He's curious to know your list of painful memories since you've been there firsthand and courtside for the worst of the worst. A glutton for punishment, apparently.
Yeah.
Our guy Heyman, one of the more active posters.
I think that conversation was about the Stanford game.
Yeah.
Which was a long time ago, but if you asked any of the guys on that team, if you asked Thad Mata, like, man, that hurt. Really, really, really hurt. And that was the era of disrespect. That was the era of, like, clawing for any inch. You know, as we talked about earlier, that's Tom Iser on the phone. That's praying to God Dickie V is talking about you. You're at the mercy of ESPN. But
OH in parentheses after
that. Yeah. And it's when, but we were all self-aware enough, even as a fan base, to know, like, man, we were on a journey. You know, our trajectory, our path was very intentional. We hated being called a mid-major team. We had high, high major aspirations. We played St. Peter's here. I can't remember. Was it like Thursday night? And then made a cross-country trip on a commercial flight to play 2 days later. It was like November 18th and November 20th, or November 19th, November 21st. Two-day turnaround to go out to Stanford. Got jobbed, really tough call at the end, against a really good team. But, I mean, we were that team with all the preseason hype. We had the roster. We had the ranking. That game, the way exempt events were built then, it's you lose and you're done.
Yeah.
So you lost the ability to go play two games at Madison Square Garden, preseason NIT. It really stung. It really stung, and it still stings. Beyond Stanford, I mean, other than like season enders, I will tell you the Villanova game in the Big East tournament last year hurt.
Really?
It was another swing game that I felt like I would never say we deserved, but man, like, our team, the story we had last year, if you weren't in that circle, I think fans really appreciated who we were and the fight we had and where we were at in February. But, man, like, the effort and energy and looking at guys like Zach Hankins, where we were at in that point of the year, like, I felt like, man, like, again, I'm not using the word deserved, but, like, it would have been incredible to get that game at that time for all of us, and really, really stung. And other than that, like, other than, like, season enders, like, random games, the Butler clock game, which I admittedly cannot get over. I can't get over. And we're going to have a – that's going to get a little more personal soon as a preview. There's going to be – there's a player in the Butler clock thing that I think will be – I don't know how to appropriately tease this, but okay. We're going to get more information about that soon, and you'll know. You'll see why.
That's what they call a tease in the business, folks.
Tennessee home, Bruce Pearl. Yeah. I would tell you if you had Wheeze on here.
You'd have a good story about that
one. No, it's just there was so much juice with that game. You know, they had refused to return the game. Big time roster, Chris Lofton. I mean, it's one of those games, like, again, Cintas Center lore, I think back to, of just being like extra loud. Volunteer Orange in here, Drew Lavender, CJ, Stan, that team. And that would have been one to get at Memphis. I talked about what a great arena that was. Again, we had it to the last war. Holloway talks about that one, which is just, it's always interesting to hear from those guys what those ones are.
What
that stick
out to
them. Yeah,
definitely.
Illinois, United Center.
Oh, yeah.
Again, random, but it was an incredible Illinois team. I think it was 63-61, lost short. VCU at home. Another weird one, but I forget how many we were up by, but we were up by a big number. D. Davis got hit in the head.
Yeah, that was the you can't call them all game.
Yeah, it was tough.
But you just fouled from start to finish. And
yeah.
It's like the refs called a lot of them, but
yeah.
Didn't get a couple of the meaningful ones at the end there.
Yeah.
Another poster has Yasiel Puig versus C.J. Anderson in a fight. Who you got?
If we're talking unsanctioned bare knuckles fight Thursday night behind Stones Lanes, man, you're going to have a really hard time having me pick against CJ Anderson. You're going to have a really, really, really hard time. I'm going Wheeze.
There's a little bit of a size differential there. You're just going with the junkyard dog and CJ Anderson.
Ultimate toughness.
What is your role when a recruit is on campus for an official visit? We go from that question to this question.
Yeah, that's good. As needed, man. I mean, we're about to have an official visit starting tomorrow, and depending on who that kid is, who they're bringing, what the plan is for each guy, it's as needed. It's all aboard. I mean, our sell is the family environment. Our sell is the number of people that are here to help you. Our sell is every resource that we have will be dedicated to helping that young man kind of thrive while he's here. So selling that family environment and being around those guys. And
we've heard the kids talk about a lot recently. I know I've gotten a lot when we've been talking to kids after they commit, sort of, you know, why'd you commit and stuff. And we consistently hear, they recruited me as a staff. All the coaches mm-hmm. were involved, that type of thing. Have you seen that since you've been around this staff and how they work together? Is it impressive to watch?
100%. And I think I talked about, as going back to the question about Travis Steele, just and that CEO mentality and how it kind of doesn't fit anymore. Like that's a great illustration of where it doesn't fit. It's the touch from everybody on the staff, whether it's the strength coach or three assistants. The old model, so to speak, was, hey, this is my guy. You know, right. Travis would be recruiting so-and-so, Luke Murray recruiting another kid, Mike Pegues recruiting another kid. I mean, that model dates back to Mark Schmidt recruiting David West.
With the head coach being the quote-unquote closer.
Head coach is a closer, and you're asking him, hey, can you call, you know, Stanley Burrell tonight? He just had a big game. And we've made a tremendous effort to kind of, in response to just what we feel is needed and expected from kids and families, to just blur those lines. And you know, the young man who's coming here tomorrow is, you know, Ben Johnson is quote-unquote the point person, but man, is it really putting your best foot forward if the only person he's talked to before he gets to campus, if it's Ben Johnson and Travis Steele every other third time, you know? So the only people that can call, again, just in case our compliance people are listening, thinking I'm calling these kids, like, are three assistants and the head coach. But hearing four voices, kind of being able to put names to faces and faces to names, just gives you an advantage.
Definitely. Another random one here. What are you and Rose Lavelle going to drum up to troll UC during the Crosstown Shootout this year?
You know what? She has an open invitation to Cintas Center whenever she wants. I don't know Rose. Certainly appreciate everything she's done. Know she's a Xavier fan. I think her father has season tickets, but if they're running a couple short, she can hit me up for tickets and we'll take care of her and whoever's in her crew.
All right. I have a feeling you're not letting us in on the full story there. I think there's more to that situation. They want to know your opinion on all-time Mick. Okay. Sorry, I wasn't reading this one. XavierFan98 wants Mario's opinion on this. Of all the times Mick Cronin has made himself look like an idiot, which was his favorite?
Man, I'll be careful on this one.
That's such a good question, I had to, like, directly quote it. XavierFan98.
I will be honest. Like, Mick... Mick is, and we all know it, is necessary to everything that's happened here with respect to the Xavier UC relationship. He is JP McCura. He is Tu Holloway. He is, I mean, I have a Bob Huggins bobblehead on my desk. It's like he's been a part of this incredible show that it's one of a kind in college basketball, and I know that we've kind of, as a fan base, which you know, I'm certainly a part of, created an image for Coach Cronin that's probably not exactly accurate to who he is.
Maybe not exactly, but are you sad a little bit, like, that it's the end of an era? He was a great heel.
He was a great heel for Xavier. He was, but you can't call it the end of an era. The Crosstown Shootout. You know, again, I get some shots taken at me because I'm a well-known wrestling fan. If Vince McMahon was booking the Crosstown Shootout over the last 20 years, like, I don't think he could have done anything crazier. I mean, if you just think about the stories intertwined, and throw the fight away, throw the press conference away, but horses being punched, ex-coaches coming back to the game and sitting in a private box, you know, the Jason Maxiel quote, Kenny Freeze, JP, 2, CJ, the 6th technical game, it's what makes that game special. And I know that's so gritty and grimy to say, but it's why, when you're in the line of target and that person behind you has the UC starter jacket on and you kind of just laugh at him a little bit, it's why that UC fan hits you with the stat from before the internet even existed. But it's great. Honestly, I don't know how much credit the new staff at UC will give to the Crosstown Shootout. I give it all the credit in the world. We show a two-minute video to each kid on campus that captures the Crosstown Shootout game night here, amongst other things that we show them. Like, our whole cell is not the Crosstown Shootout. But, like, nothing in college sports in terms of the heat on a game night matches that type of game.
I couldn't agree more. I am legitimately, like, I agree with you that it will not hurt the Shootout. I think the Shootout will remain.
The Shootout will evolve.
But it is an end of an era. The Mick era is over, and that was a great era of the Shootout. Like, he was a perfect heel for that rivalry.
Man, I'm going to tell you, there's a guy out there in the deserts of Tucson. There may be a couple more chapters to the... It may be the extended version. It may be a remix.
Trust me, I am very much looking forward to that situation developing. But now it's like I can watch it from afar and really just enjoy it. It's no longer like... It's right here being involved in the work environment. I think part of what made Mick so great was the fact that he had such the little man syndrome and, like, had that persona so much at a time when UC was taking a backseat to Xavier and Xavier was becoming, like, the high major significant program in the city. And I think that's why it worked well. So you don't have a favorite time when Mick made an ass of himself?
You know, the one I've always thought was funny is just the quote he had about Syracuse being able to win the A-10. I mean, like, Syracuse, I can't remember what place they were in the Big East, but it was just – I'll keep it very simple and quick with that one.
All right. Muncie69 says he's never been very impressed with the music during timeouts, and he's curious if it's chosen, if you have any consideration of outsourcing that to a service that specializes in music for sporting events. Just wants to know what you can do in that regard.
You know what? I don't think, I mean, other than politics, I'm not sure there's anything people disagree about more than, like, in-game music and what people want to hear. I mean, we do a fan survey that gets hundreds upon hundreds of responses, which is great, which we read. I mean, there's the distribution list on that bad boy is deep, and we read it. We adjust based on what we hear there. But for every fan that wants more hip-hop, there's another fan that wants jock jams. For every fan that doesn't want jock jams, there's a fan that wants country. And our attitude toward music has always recently been to whatever you hear in your song, not to give Kiss one, or whatever you hear in your car on Kiss 107, like, stay in that range. You know, I guess it would be pop-ish, you know, with, like, a little mix of hip-hop. You know, it's like when your grandma and grandpa are driving in the car, like, what are they singing along to with the kids? You know, like, what's on the car in the morning when you're driving your kids to school?
Apparently it's All I Do Is Win by DJ Khaled.
I hear that, and I know that's a part of the mix, and I think we're conscious about trying to have some variety with those kind of scripted pieces. Again, I'm a Bengals fan. I go to Paul Brown Stadium. I know the Bengal is going to scrape at the flag, and, you know, that's a part of that game day experience.
Can you do your best Bengal roar impression?
No.
Please.
No. This week hurt to be a Bengals fan, as always. Okay. But maybe you can edit it in. Okay. Do you have that? Just get a good one. I hear the question about music. I appreciate it. We beat the drum along with Brian Hicks, Greg Christopher. Everybody wants that game environment. You know, we talked about the scoreboard. Like, we we value those however many nights a year, preferably more than 16. We value them at a high, high level, and we want to make sure that that experience is great. So if they have specific songs they'd like to hear, fire it to us on Twitter. If they see playlists that NBA teams use, fire it our way. I mean, we'll listen to anything anybody wants to chip in on that one.
All right, this is a great way to ask this question, too. I can't believe we made it three pages, and this was talking about on the message board, but it applies to us as well. Nobody has brought up jerseys, so you had the recent update. What's next on the jersey front? Everyone always wants to know what's the deal with the Nike deal.
Nike puts you in a five-year window where you have to hold tight on your design just because of retail tie-ins. So we have the four colorways that are tied to like the swords on the shorts. We had a little change to the top after Blewett and Makura's last year. There was like that offsetting color thing to the collar, which a lot of us didn't feel like looked great. So we're kind of in a holding pattern for a couple more years. The one change you'll see, not this year, but next, will be to the gray colorway. It's too dark, and that happened by accident. Like, we were at a pretty good gray a couple years ago, like end of the A10, and it got darker, and we got in trouble a couple times last year with TV was unhappy because of color contrast, which I totally appreciate. Our conference was unhappy, so we're kind of in a bad spot this year because we have one white home set, we have the Running Man white home set, and then we have basically four jerseys that you can't wear anywhere but on the road. So
that's less than ideal.
So you'll see that gray kind of tinkered, either lighter shade or maybe we'll do something with it. I think the quick answer with it would be to kick it to a lighter shade and maybe turn the numbers on it navy. We're kind of testing, like, Xavier has a new script logo, which you might have seen sneak out there a little bit.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily what we wore to the soccer game or the
softball game.
The softball game, it's right. Like a little modernized script. Yeah. So we're going to test that out in Spain. We'll have a white set, navy set. If people like them, we'll maybe wear them to Musketeer Madness. And we didn't go like Spain patch on them. And if it's something that people like, considering, as I said earlier, we only have two jerseys that we can wear at home, maybe it's a game you pick a, maybe it's a jersey we pick a game or two to wear. We'll see. Interested to hear what people think. I've shared pictures with a couple people, and responses have been a little mixed. And as with, again, just like songs, as we talked about, there's always going to be people that want something different.
I'm kind of a gray connoisseur personally, and I will say I agree with you that the two Holloway era grays were really good grays.
They were better.
Yeah,
I'll give you that
shade of gray. And we'll wrap it up with this: are there any discussions about retiring 5 or 52? And also, what is the jersey retirement process like here at Xavier?
I don't know if there's a process. There's not anything in our policy manual.
Maybe it's
championed by Iser. Mentally, with me being a guy that I don't want to say I have any power, but I am the guy who hits send on the jersey orders. Like, if you come in my office and ask for 5 or 52 or 55, a couple others, like, you better have it, you know. So mentally, they're kind of semi-retired, and if I go away, maybe somebody will pop those things out a little bit easier, but I think those are kind of numbers. It's a little bit like that USC 55 for the linebacker, and every school kind of has one or two. Like, you gotta earn that bad boy.
All right. Mario, is there anything we didn't touch on?
That was a pretty good round table.
All right. Well, you've been listening to another edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. For Mario Mercurio, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.